Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
We're working on a plan for DACA. People want to see that happen. You have 800,000 young people brought here, no fault of their own, but we're going to get massive border security as part of that. And I think something can happen. We'll see what happens.
Leader Pelosi and I had a constructive meeting with President Trump. One of our most productive discussions was about the DACA program, in which we all agreed on a framework. Past DACA protections and additional border security measures, excluding the wall.
We are going to have a bigger and broader discussion, and we're going to go back to those first principles. What does the Constitution require? I may be completely wrong about this, but I felt like, you know, the emperor has no clothes.
Even though I've been able to make some really significant accomplishments here in Arizona, the opportunity to go to work in D.C. at the Department of Energy to advance the administration's energy policy, it's something that you just can't turn down.
And joining us in studio to talk about whether there is an agreement or not on the future of DACA, Arizona Attorney General Mark Brnovich's lawsuit against the State Board of Regents, and Corporation Commissioner Doug Little's new job in the Trump administration, are Julie Earthly, communications consultant at Earthly Uncuffed, and Mike Noble, chief pollster and managing partner at OH Predictive Insights. Thanks to you both for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So let's talk first off about DACA. This is a program that President Trump has said he is going to end. He's given Congress 6 months to come up with some kind of legislative solution. And there either is a deal between the president and congressional Democrats, or there isn't, depending on, I guess, maybe what day of the week it is or what hour in the day it is. Julie, let me start with you on this. Do we have a sense of what actually is going on here?
I don't think we do. I think the sense that we get, though, is that Democrats are willing to deal with the president. And that's actually a good thing. It's good for the country. I think they are putting the needs of Dreamers and the needs of Americans first. And I can understand why Republicans are very concerned. They have both chambers of Congress. They have the executive branch. And they haven't been able to make a deal with their own president. They haven't really been shown that they can govern. And I think that that's a problem for Republicans. So I think you're going to see them fighting very strongly against them, against this deal, which is unfortunate because this will help Dreamers.
Mike, this is an issue that reliably has polled fairly high. A lot of Americans feel like DACA recipients should be not deported from the country. Does that, do you think, make it any more likely that there is, in fact, some kind of agreement here and that congressional Republicans, to Julie's point, might get on board with this?
Yeah, I think at first they were against it, but now, you know, I think Trump is making this deal with the Democrats ultimately get them, because you've seen Washington become so partisan and divided. It's just, we're going to say no to the other side at all costs, but I think this will ultimately get the Republicans on board. And you're right, all the polling we've seen is roughly, it's in the high 70s. With DACA. And so, I mean, that's a winning issue in general, especially if you're a Republican in a swing district. So you definitely are able to grab a coalition out of that. And I think, though, the other big question is, you know, whether or not the, wall will be included with that as well, because I think that is, you know, if he doesn't do that, the thing is, what does that do to your base? And then I think the Republicans may suffer heavy losses in the midterms.
This question's been asked a lot before, but since there is some agreement on DACA, a lot of agreement on DACA, does that somehow lead to comprehensive reform, since the president has said, oh, we're going to talk border security, but the wall might be in the future? Julie, is there a chance for that as we see sort of this strange bedfellow sort of thing with the Democrats?
Well, I'm always a little bit of an idealist on comprehensive immigration reform. I mean, I've been working on this issue and advocating for comprehensive immigration reform for 10 years now. And so the realist in me says it's not likely, but seeing this coming together of Democrats and the president on the Dreamers gives me some hope that maybe that could happen. I still think, though, that it'll be some incremental steps. I don't think it'll be one big package. And I think we have our own senators, McCain and Flake, to thank for that.
Well, that's what I wanted to follow up with Mike on, because we hear how much danger Senator Flake is in. And polls are so early, but there was a Democratic poll, at least leaning Democratic poll, that had Jeff Flake down by more than 20 points in the primary, which is really hard for a lot of us to believe. But how much does that change the dynamic if Jeff Flake is somehow knocked off in the primary?
Well, I mean, that's so currently right now you have Kelly Ward running against, you know, Senator Flake, and Kelly Ward lost. I don't even think she broke 40% of the total vote she got against McCain. And I think the issue is that, you know, there's a currently the way that race sits, there's a flawed candidate. And if, let's say, Ward lands up beating Jeff, that's fine. However, then you're going to go in the general election, which most likely it's going to be Kyrsten Sinema, which is hands down the Democrats' best and last hope to get a Senate seat here in Arizona. Not only she's well-funded, she's been very moderate, she's very well-liked, she's a great public speaker. And so I think if Kelly Ward's our nominee, I think we're going to have a Democrat as our U.S. Senator.
Mike, I wanted to ask you about something you talked about with the base. And Iowa Congressman Steve King reacted to the initial news that the president and Chuck and Nancy, as he has now taken to calling them, had reached a deal on DACA. And he basically said that if this is true, that the president's base is blown up forever. You're talking about some moderate, maybe Republicans in swing districts. Do you think that Trump's base, or maybe the more conservative Republicans, would go along with something like this, absent a wall in that particular agreement?
No. Absolutely not. Because here's the thing. When campaigning, that's how Trump's trajectory. I mean, he was, let's be honest, not a very viable, realistic candidate. Then he came here to actually here in Arizona, had a large rally and said, hey, I'm going to build the wall. And you've seen the trajectory. And now he's the president of the United States. So I think that if you don't deliver the wall, the base, all those folks that he was, especially those blue collar folks in the Midwest, he was able to grab, you're going to see them run also independents. And I think we're going to see a heavy amount of losses, because at the end of the day, the argument's going to be from the Democrats is that you guys had control of government. You've been complaining for 8 years about governing, and now you get in and you couldn't govern and deliver some of the more simpler things. So, yeah, I think absolutely you have to produce results. So whether it's tax reform or it's border, but it has to be incremental. So I think if we do see anything, it'll be a trade-off between DACA. And so the Democrats win, but then also the Republicans can have their wall.
Well, Julie, is it safe to say that the wall is a deal breaker for most Democrats?
Yes, I think definitely. I think the deal with DACA can't include the wall. It's possible that they could talk about the wall afterwards, as Mike said. But no, I just don't see Chuck and Nancy going along with that or any of the other Democrats.
It sounds like a sitcom, doesn't it?
Chuck
and Nancy.
Well, I'm curious, though, on the wall question, though. It's just when you look at, you know, when it comes to, you know, securing a border, because it's not just when people think about illegal immigration, it's not just about just Hispanics coming over. For example, I think there was six months ago, there was in Pinal County, they arrested three folks. One was from Syria, one was from Ukraine, another one, and one was convicted of murder, basically, out here. And anyways, and so with I think the security, it's not just, and I'm always curious, so like, I guess, why wouldn't you want that security, especially with what we saw in London this morning? I mean, terrorism and security is a threat, and that's why I'm always curious of, I guess, why Democrats are so against the security aspect of the border, because it's not just keeping out Hispanics.
Definitely say they're not against the security aspect. I think what they understand is that simply building a wall is not security. That's sort of a false sense of security. And even Senator Flake has talked about that there are different ways that we can secure the border that don't involve a physical wall. And Democrats have been on board with that. And certainly there was a lot of progress made under President Obama's administration, specifically with more immigration officers on the border, or Border Patrol officers down there. And so to say that Democrats are you know, somehow not in favor of border security, I think is a misnomer. And that actually, I know, is part of this DACA deal. They've been talking about it. They've just been saying security beyond this physical wall.
And Mike, not take us down too far a slippery slope here, but one of the questions that comes up is whether you prevent terror attacks only by border security. There are people who are really concerned about domestic terrorism as well, mm-hmm. and that's sort of been a shift from Democrats to Republicans. So sort of a general philosophical bend is a little bit different, so maybe that's part of the point.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the Obama administration, they did, you know, add, you know, more Border Patrol agents on there, but also from a policy-wise, when it came to the deportation, ICE, I think they were extremely lax because, again, they take a lot of their direction from the executive just because there's a law in the book. However, if they do not enforce the law, and I think that was one of the biggest issues, and now you've seen Trump come in with his tougher stance, you saw a dramatic decrease in illegal immigration crossing. So again, I think it's just a difference. But the wall, obviously, is part of it. Everyone can agree that it's not just the wall. We're going to have other things in place, like surveillance and more bodies out there. It's just the wall, though, is going to be part of it. And it wouldn't be relatively, compared to what our economy and everything else, is relatively inexpensive to do in the scheme of things.
I want to move on to another issue that also kind of touches DACA, which is the Attorney General has filed a lawsuit against the Board of Regents saying that they are unconstitutionally raising tuition. It is not, as the state constitution requires, as nearly free as possible. Julie, what do you make of this? Obviously, university education is more expensive than it was 5 years, 10 years, 15 years ago. Is it too high, and are the regions to blame for that?
This is so interesting. You know, I think the premise of this suit is kind of ridiculous, especially bringing the Dreamers into it and saying that it is the fault of the Board of Regents. I mean, certainly there is lots of fault on this issue, and you can look at our legislature and all of the cuts. I mean, going from the state paying for 75% of the cost of tuition down to 30-something is a huge drop. You can't take the legislature out of this equation. And so while I disagree with the premise of it, I think if you look at parents, certainly if you look at college-age students, they would agree we are not meeting our constitutional mandate of having higher education, public universities, nearly as free as possible.
And clearly, Mike, you know, as Julie said, for a lot of folks, it is difficult to afford to go to college, even at one of the public universities here in Arizona. Is there blame to be spread around? Is this solely on the regents here?
There's been some cuts. However, I mean, you just look at the one stat you can't get around is that in the last 15 years, tuition has increased anywhere between 300 to 375% between the three universities. And you know, and you look at also. You look at the regents, right? What is their role? They're very similar to the Arizona Corporation Commission, which is, you know, they are the ones that, you know, approve whether or not the tuition, and they've just been going along increasing. But it's not just that; it's the fees that come along. Let's say I'm going to ASU. You have to pay an athletics fee. Well, what if I don't really care about athletics? I don't want to go to the games. Or you got to pay some of these other fees. It seems there's really been no one watching, and it starts the conversation, which I think is the biggest thing here. But the tuition should be almost free, but we should have more options as well, because here in Arizona, a lot of other states, they have where you at a community colleges, you can get a 4-year degree. Granted, those are for more blue collar jobs. However, there should be more options here in Arizona and with the current 4-year public universities, aside from GCU, you know, I think something has to be done. But I think this is a great way to start the conversation.
Now, in some ways, because Arizona is at least a Republican leaning state, whether a Republican dominated state or not, I guess we could argue the point. But now the Governor Ducey has come out and basically said he doesn't understand the suit. He is not in favor of the suit. Do you two see any possible infighting there between the Attorney General and the governor?
I think it's quite possible. I think it actually shows, though, that the governor is pretty out of touch with where Arizonans are at, because I think it would be difficult to find the average Arizonan who believes that tuition is great at our state universities, that somehow these huge rises in the cost of tuition are somehow wonderful and meeting our constitutional mandate. I mean, that's just clearly not the case. And so I think in this respect, the AG has the upper hand, at least with the public.
Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, but I think we've seen from, you know, Governor Ducey, he's always done a great job. But it's tough, though, being in his position, because AG, clearly his whole office, I think they're one of the most staffed government agencies. I think they have over 1,000 folks over there, and they've had, especially legal, you've had a lot of time to dig through, and then it sprung about, you know, the governor's working on, you know, bringing large companies here. He had got education that got dropped in his lap, and so now it's just another thing that gets thrown in his lap. So I think what I've seen, that the governor's done a great job of reaching out across the aisle, and, you know, I know he has a great relationship with Attorney General Mark Brnovich, so I see them kind of getting together.
But does that change here, though?
No, I don't think so. I think they're going to talk and you know, work on the issue, but I don't think you're going to see any large conflict like Diane Douglas, for example, and Governor Ducey, if you remember those days.
That's Mike Noble, also joined in studio by Julie Earthly. This is the Friday Newscap. More conversation in just a minute. Good morning. This is the show on KJZZ and KJZZ.org with Steve Goldstein. I'm Mark Brody in Phoenix. We are in the midst of the Friday newscap, joined in studio by Mike Noble with OH Predictive Insights and Julie Earthly with Earthly Uncuffed. I want to ask about the news that the Arizona Supreme Court is going to take up the state's Medicaid expansion program. This has been controversial basically from the start. Governor Brewer several years ago announced it. A couple state senators walked out on her during that speech. A group of Republican lawmakers is suing, saying that the way that this was enacted was not constitutional because it's a tax and not enough members voted for it to be a tax. Now that this program has been in effect and there are real people who have gained Medicaid under this program, Mike, is it harder, do you think, even for a court maybe, to say that, no, this was not done correctly and it can stay?
Yeah, it's always tough when you, especially when you give folks, let's say, expand coverage or they get more subsidies, things of that nature, when you try to retract that, especially something as vital as this, politically, ethically, I mean, there's just a lot of issues. It just, yeah, I think you're going to see that there's going to be a lot of pushback and a lot of issues over there.
Julie, do you think that if, obviously, the courts don't, they look at the law in theory, they don't necessarily look at public opinion or some of those other factors that policymakers might. Let's say, for example, that the high court decides, yes, this was not done legally and not enough people voted for this tax increase and the Medicaid expansion cannot go into effect. Do you think that there's any chance that this legislature and this governor would enact it, quote unquote, the right way?
Oh, boy. Well, the state would be in a world of hurt if this went away. I mean, this would impact our budget in a huge way because we, you know, voters also agreed to already essentially fund single folks who don't have children who also need Medicaid. And so we've already expanded it to that point. And so then we would be on the hook without federal dollars if we were to just allow this to go away. If this tax, what they're calling a tax, which the lower courts believe is actually a fee, we would be in a world of hurt. Is the legislature going to recognize that and do something about it? I think that they'll have to. In many respects, I think that they would have to. I think the governor especially would be put in an incredibly difficult position because this would blow a huge hole in our budget. And, you know, we already have these other lawsuits on the horizon as well, including this billion-dollar lawsuit with the legislature not funding building maintenance and repairs for our K-12 schools. So at some point, this legislature is going to have to decide whether or not revenues make sense to fund the very essence of our state. They've decided that revenues are always bad. Tax cuts are always good. We're talking about kicking 400,000 Arizonans off this program, our neighbors. This is going to be a difficult one for them to deal with.
And without really knowing the future of the Affordable Care Act entirely either.
Correct.
Which is what Arizona's relying on quite a bit. Mark, I wanted to ask one question related to the politics of this. Going back a few years, as Mark mentioned with Governor Brewer, Julie, you first. How big a deal was it at the time? And I mean the fact that there was actual crossover. And that was a time when people might actually say they were moderate Republicans in the state legislature.
I think it was huge. I mean, I think this was an example of good policy. This was an example of both sides working together in a state where that rarely happens and at a time when that is just not happening even nationally. And so to undo that work, to undo what a lot of people consider to be good policy, would really be very disastrous, not just for our budget, but I think just for the political nature of this state. It would cause a lot of distress, I think, among voters.
You know, it's no secret. We're a conservative Republican state. I mean, we have just about all the statewide leaders are Republican. We have majorities in the House and Senate. And, you know, when you look at the House level, there's only two, three actual real swing districts, as we would say. So a lot of these Republicans are in there. They will run, obviously, placate to the base. You win the primary, you win the general, right? And so when this was getting pushed through, I think the argument Governor Brewer is making is that, you know, the rural counties were going to be the ones that were going to be most affected if this expansion didn't happen. And it was very contentious. And, you know, they had, you know, they ended up getting, I think, five or six moderate Republicans to end up breaking and voting for and passing it. But the conservatives were not happy. And then, of course, you know, there was a kind of a bullseye on those folks. So I think if they had to do it over again, I think most of them probably wouldn't have gone along with it, would be my guess. And it's just, it would be a very contentious issue coming up, because that's one thing that you're not going to see these guys raise taxes.
Just about a minute and a half left, and I want to ask both of you very quickly about Doug Little, the Corporation Commissioner, who will be stepping down from that post at the end of the month to take a job in the U.S. Energy Department. The CorpCom has been, I think, a surprise for many people, sort of a hotbed of activity, not much of it good in the public's eyes. Julie, does his departure and whoever the governor appoints to replace him, does that change things at all at the commission, do you think?
I think it continues to put them on the hot seat. I mean, it's great for Doug Little in that he gets to sort of escape this cloud of contention. But, you know, there was this recent poll by High Ground that showed that 65% of Arizonans are concerned about the possibility of corruption based upon big money, secretive dark money. And that goes directly to Doug Little's race back in 2014. And the fact that it is widely believed that APS, the utility that this commission is supposed to regulate, played a huge hand in getting him elected. And so I think that this is a big issue for the Corporation Commission, and it puts the governor, I think, in a difficult place as well, because he now needs to appoint someone who can bring some integrity to that commission, because a lot of Arizonans, including Republicans, are rightly concerned about corruption down at the commission.
Mike, what do you think?
I saw that poll, and frankly, I think that gives a false positive. You look at the way the question was worded. If you were to ask, all right, whether it's Corporation Commission or any other position, if you were to say, hey, do you think that, you know, that they're corrupt over there? I think you're going to see a pretty high number in general of politicians, right? And let's be honest, the Corporation Commission, until 2-3 years ago, if you were to ask 100 Arizonans, I think 3 would actually know of the name, let alone even the basics of what they do over there, quite frankly. And so that's why, for me, I think part of this too is that I think that what fed the story, I think it was a very false positive in a lot of ways. And again, the Corporation Commission, a lot of this has been due to the solar fighting between them and the utility. So corruption wise, like I said, that poll, I'd take it with a grain of salt.
Well, I do think that there are a lot of people who believe that the majority of politicians are corrupt. And so I would agree with that premise. Although I think the fact that we have federal indictments based upon Johnson Utilities, and we do have this APS spending millions of dollars in dark money spending, I think that has caused a lot of voters to wake up to what's going on at the commission.
You've seen it on both sides, though. I mean, solar, they're both guilty. So,
unfortunately, we'll have to leave it there. Certainly lots more to talk about. Mike Noble, chief pollster and managing partner at OH Predictive Insights. Julie Earfley, communications consultant at Earfley Uncuffed. Thank you both for coming in. Good conversation.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.